Elaine Dunn is chair of the Federation of Early Childhood Providers, and she's on the line now. Good morning, Elaine.
Good morning, Owen. How are you?
I'm good. You might bring me up to date as to what's been happening over the last few days, Elaine, because I was off on Friday and off yesterday as well, but I was keeping an eye on social media about the 500 childcare providers that closed in protest over funding. That was on Friday. Is there more happening now?
Yes, no, absolutely. We have another protest date on the 25th of November as well. And then we're now working on two dates in December because at the moment we can't see anything coming from the department. We've been offered no meetings, no nothing. We have requested a meeting. And the only way that we can have a meeting is if we call off the 25th of November, which we can't do because, look, we're fighting to survive here. Small rural and urban services and medium-sized services are fighting for survival. And while other large services have got really well looked after through core funding, we have been left behind dramatically. It's awful what's going on. And when you see all of those people, so we did six protests and we did Cork, Mayo, Clare, Galway, Sligo and Dublin last Friday. And we got huge turnout on all of them and we got huge support from the parents. We also did a petition where I think it's up 12,000 signatures now at this point, and it's rising every single day. So we have a lot of support from the parents. And this is something that Minister and his department are, you know, they're not aware of. And we've been trying to tell them all along that we are bringing the parents along with us. They do not want to see these wonderful small services closing down.
The government did spend €259 million in childcare core funding, though, did it not? And like that was an increase, I think, of €13 million. It didn't come to you?
No. So last year, through our funding from government, so we would have been getting what is called higher capitation and a programme support payment last year, we would have been getting €14.15 per child. Now we're getting €13.61. We're less than what we got last year. And this is why we're raising awareness to people, so people understand why we're coming out in the streets. Like, they're taking away our businesses. And you know everything has gone up, absolutely everything. Mm. Cost of living is just unbelievable at the moment. And we're here, and when I say these services are top quality, they are absolutely amazing. Like, in all services, we've got really, really well-educated people working in the sector. But unfortunately, in our services, that's not been recognised because of this core funding. If one service closes down, then the core funding is not fit for purpose. That's the way we see it. But if you're looking at a survey we did on the 19th of April this year, and that said that over 260 or more will close in June of next year of the small services, then we have a big problem. One of the things that government have always said that, you know, in our rural, there's a document that they have out, okay, and it says in the document that they are committed, government are committed to support services in rural Ireland, including childcare. There are their words, not mine, including childcare. And in actual fact, what they're doing is they're closing down services in rural Ireland.
We now have 500 of the Federation of Early Childhood Provider members saying that they have closed on Friday as a result of funding and policy issues inadequately addressed in Budget 2023. Are they closed indefinitely or for a certain period of time, Elaine?
No, so these are protests, so we close on different dates. So we have the 25th is the next date. And in actual fact, I think we're going to have higher numbers because we see a lot more providers now are coming on board and saying because of the lack of respect from our minister.
So you're closing for one day?
Friday. We're closing for one more day in November and possibly two dates in December, and it will continue on until somebody in government listens to what we are saying. And we are bringing parents with us. Parents are coming out on the streets as well. You know, it's up to government now to sit down around the table with the Federation. I mean, we've tried to get our minister to listen, and he basically said, and we did say on the news, that it was unwarranted and unfair on the parents. What is unfair on the parents is that these services will be gone next year. Mm. That's what's unfair on the parents. Parental choice has been taken away by our minister and his department as we speak.
I mentioned those 500 that closed on the day there last Friday. Is there some providers, though, that have closed full-time?
Oh, absolutely. A wonderful lady, Bernadine McElroy, up in Galway, she's already announced to her parents that she's closing next June. And then there were six others at the outside the Dáil who were saying the same, that they will be gone this time next year. I will be one of them if something doesn't come forth, because obviously my rent and everything else has gone up and what they're giving me from government just does not cover my costs. And that's my small service up in the Dublin Mountains will be gone.
I note as well Geraldine Delahunt. She runs Wigwam's childcare here in Kildare on the Curra for the last 20 years. Sure. She has 42 children in her service, including 7 with additional needs, and says she had to hire extra staff to meet the needs of the children. She's quoted here as saying, "Extra money from core funding hasn't given me any impact at all. I had to take on extra staff." This, as you mentioned as well, Elaine, is affecting parents also, and they're quite equally as stressed and as angry.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, we can see, we're meeting with the parents all the time. I mean, I've had loads of conversations with my parents going through all of this. We did a very detailed letter of how the core funding and how funding started for ECC services from the beginning up to now. And parents are going, "Oh my goodness, we didn't know that that's all you were getting." Now, lots of parents around this country are saying, "Sure, we'll give you the €7 extra per child a week. No problem. We'll pay the €28 a month." Because that's what it is. That's all we're looking for. Let's be real. You know, €7 per child per week. And we are not allowed to take any money from our parents to help us.
Why not?
So who's going to give it to us? Because you're signed up to a contract, and in the contract it clearly states you cannot take any funding at all from anything from your parents whatsoever. And if you do, you're breaching your contract, and you take the risk of them pulling back all of the funding that they've given you so far.
Right. So the only way that you can get increased money is from the government.
Absolutely. That's the only way. Unless they change the contract and allow us to accept the €7 a week from parents who can pay it. And by the way, not every parent can pay that either, because cost of living has gone up on them as well. You know, so it's difficult. It's difficult for everybody. But we want to be here next September, opening our doors and smiling and going to the parents. Yes, we are viable businesses now because governments have stepped up and looked after us. But we're not getting that feedback whatsoever. There's a great spin going on.
What happens now, Elaine? You mentioned that 25th of November date is when the next protest is going to take place, and the only way that anything is going to happen is if you call that off. You don't have any intentions of calling that off?
Well, no, not at all, because there's no offer on the table. We did ask, was there something on the table that we could sit down and discuss, but we didn't get a response to that, so we're presuming there's nothing. We've had no response from our minister whatsoever since Friday. All we see is that he's going to see loads of services and doing lots of photographs and up on Twitter and everything, but he's not addressing the situation and the issue for these people on the ground. He's absolutely not addressing it. Telling us that these are unwarranted protests, that's disrespectful to all of the people who are coming out here on the streets looking for the right to survive.
Okay, Chair of the Federation of Early Childhood Providers, Elaine Dunn, with that update. Thanks for joining us, Elaine, and no doubt we'll talk to you again closer to the 25th of November. And indeed, if any parents are affected by that, or if any local childcare providers here in the county want to get in touch to pass on their experiences, then of course our phone lines are open. But that is Elaine Dunn. Thanks, Elaine.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Now, Sinn Féin TD for Wicklow and spokesperson on Foreign Affairs and Defence, John Brady, is bringing forward proposals designed to tackle the ongoing crisis in the retained fire service to the Dáil. John Brady's proposals coincide with members of the service marching to the Dáil to highlight how Minister Dara O'Brien's failure to engage has led to a situation where there is danger to the safety of both members of the retained fire service and members of the public. John Brady, good morning.
Good morning. How are we?
Good, good. We spoke about this a couple of weeks ago on the programme with the industrial organiser with SIP2, Noel Maguire, because SIP2 then said that they were in dispute with the various different county councils around the country regarding the recruitment and retention crisis. What's your view on this, John?
Absolutely. I concur wholeheartedly with that. There is a crisis within the retained service and has been for many years, so much so that the head of the Chief Fire Officers Association in 2018 said that the service is not fit for purpose. And indeed, many in the fire service would say it hasn't been fit for purpose for many, many decades. So essentially, we have a service designed for the 1950s that hasn't changed very much and is still in operation. And it's caused huge huge problems right across the state, not just for the retained firefighters who are professional. You know, they want to do a good job, but they're hamstrung in terms of you know, what they can do, the limited resources, the major pressures that they're under. It's putting their safety at risk, and it's also putting the safety of members of the public at risk, so much so that we've seen the results of a recent survey of the approximately 3,000 retained firefighters, and 60% of them are saying that they do not see themselves within the service over the next couple of years. So we've a major recruitment, we've a major retention crisis, which has led to a situation that many fire stations right across the state now are operating at in the region of a 50% capacity. So in some stations that may be a one-pump station where there's supposed to be 9 firefighters, they are now operating at levels of between 4 and 5 firefighters. So there is a crisis, and unfortunately that crisis has not been dealt with by the minister, nor indeed the government. So, you know, the ballot for industrial action notices have been served on the chief executives who act as fire authorities right across the state. That balloting has actually started in some areas, and 97% of firefighters in a lot of areas are saying no, look, this has got to the point now where we have to, for our own safety, for the safety of the public, we have to take action before more lives are lost. And of course, we remember here in Wicklow, 2 brave firefighters lost their lives due to the major deficiencies within the service. That was 15 years ago. 2 years prior to the death of those 2 firefighters, Brian Murray, one of those that died, led a walk out of the fire station here in Bray, and he said someone would lose their life because of the serious issues within the retained service. 2 years later, himself and his colleague, you know, lost their lives. So firefighters are saying things are worse now than 15 years ago. I was talking to one firefighter yesterday who is in the service 26 years, and he said he has not seen it as bad now since any point over the last 26 years. So we need solutions. We need to, you know, have the ability to look at, you know, areas of huge growth. Wicklow is one, Kildare is another. You know, what merits putting a full-time fire service in place, what measures need to be put in place to retain and give, you know, the ability to be able to recruit. And I know the public representatives there in Kildare, Patricia Ryan, Rada Crone, even Councillor Noel Connolly, you know, they're trying their best. They're bringing forward motions on the council to try to put in place full-time stations on the ground in Kildare. But their hands are tied because, you know, it's the finances of the local authority will dictate what capital, what infrastructure goes in place. So
what do you think those solutions are then, John? Is it to do with pay? Is it to do with the, as you mentioned there, the full-time stations that need to be brought in? Or also, one thing that has been raised on a number of occasions is the radius that people have to live in. So, for example, if you have a fire station in Monastrevin, you have to live within a certain amount of kilometres or a certain time frame from that station, and that's causing issues there because you're limiting the pool of people who will be eligible to apply.
Absolutely. So, I mean, there isn't one issue that is directly affecting the service. There's a multitude of issues, and that's why the motion that Sinn Féin have brought forward calls for the establishment of a cross-party committee, a ROCTIS committee, to get under the bonnet of the retained service and look at all of these issues and bring forward a comprehensive report with recommendations. So all of those issues, you know, firefighters, because of the pressures they're under, because of the lack of, you know, recruits and the retention, it's putting other firefighters under serious pressure where they're on call 24-7. And when someone is on call 24-7, they have to be within 5 minutes away from the fire station. So their lives are essentially put on hold. They're not paid for that. They're on a basic retainer, which is about €8,500 a year. So I know firefighters have said, look, the working time directive needs to be looked at, that they would be paid for the time they're on call. So that is one issue. there's other issues there in terms of, you know, the major urban areas where, you know, having a retained service simply is not fit for purpose anymore. It was okay back in the 1950s when there wasn't as many cars on the road. But you think of, you know, a retained firefighter trying to hold down a job. The beeper goes off. He has to try jump in his car, get through traffic, through some of the major towns to the fire station within 5 minutes and be on a tender, you know, dispatched to a fire. So all of these things are causing serious difficulties. They're putting the firefighters under serious pressure, you know, and the fact that they are operating with, you know, 50% crews in many areas, not just putting their lives, their safety at risk, but also the safety of the public. So the failure here to deal with the issue, to bring this service to a point that it is fit for purpose in the 21st century, and that, you know, they are an emergency first responder service. So we need to give them the tools, we need to give them the ability to be able to operate with a level of, you know, the dedication, the professionalism that is there within the service. But the failure by government to address these issues has led to this very, very serious crisis within the service.
And of course, firefighters not only responsible for pulling people out of fires or car wrecks, they're also people who have to make the decision when it's safe for others to enter the scene of an accident to do their job. So it's not simply just going in and fighting fires, so to speak. That motion has been brought forward this evening, John. How confident would you be that you'll get the support of government?
Well, look, this motion, you know, it isn't a Sinn Féin motion. This has been crafted listening to the firefighters, so it is very much their motion. They've asked for us you know, positions of power to listen to their concerns and to start taking action to address the serious issues within the service. So, you know, I hope that it will receive cross-party support. I know the firefighters are marching on the Dáil to coincide with the motion this evening. So, you know, there's going to be firefighters from right across the state, from Clare, Wicklow, Kerry, Cork, Donegal, coming to the Dáil, you know, to ask their political representatives from all parties and known to listen to them, to listen to the very, very serious concerns that have led to a situation where, you know, they are in the process of balloting for industrial strike action, you know, to demand, to call on us as public representatives to start fixing the very, very serious crisis that's in the retained service and make it a service that is fit for purpose.
Okay, Sinn Féin TD for Wicklow and indeed spokesperson on Foreign Affairs and Defence, John Brady. Thanks for joining us this morning, John. And no doubt we'll have an update on that throughout the course of the evening on our news bulletins here on KFM. Kira.
So yesterday, a €200,000 sustainability-focused Earth Prize competition did open for registration. That is for students between the ages of 13 and 19. They're urged to take part in the competition, saying it's vital currently for the Earth in the situation we're in. And it all was created by the Earth Foundation. That's a non-profit organisation based over in Geneva. It was founded by Peter McGarry, who is a Kildare native. He joins me now. Good morning.
Good morning, Kieran.
Peter, you were visiting your alma mater yesterday, NACE CBS. Tell us a bit more about the competition and its rewards, aside from the obvious $200,000.
Sure. So it's an annual competition. It's very much global in reach. We launched it for the first time last year, and we managed to get it into 114 countries and territories. We're currently in the middle of the second edition. And the idea behind the competition is to get teenagers working on solutions to environmental problems. You know, a lot of negativity about this topic in the press. There's a lot of frustration by young people. And the idea behind the competition is to channel the frustrations and the passion into something positive.
Yeah, and it means, if you were lucky enough to win, that these students would have access to 40 mentors from top universities. And then it's also noted exclusive video-based learning content covering key environmental topics and featuring 9 young international environmental entrepreneurs. So with that and potential ideas people may have, do they need to be completely innovative?
Yeah, like, We were talking here to some of the students at Make CBS, and we were getting questions like this about, you know, I don't really have an idea at the moment. And the students were, you know, a bit worried to enter. But really, what we've designed is a platform that will help the kids from the moment they register. So registration is free. And what we want the kids to do is sign up as an individual or as a team of up to five. And then what we do is give them instant access to our educational materials. So they're, like you mentioned, these inspirational videos of people around the world who've, young people who've made changes and are very inspirational. And the idea is that the kids will watch these videos in a classroom setting or, you know, at home and go, I could do this. And then straight away, they can ask questions to university students from like world-class universities around the world, like the Stanfords and the Harvards and the Oxfords, etc. And they can get mentored straight away, even before they formalize their idea. And over the passage then until the end of January, when they have to make their final submission, we really want to get the best ideas out of the young people. So that's the idea.
So obviously the winning team will receive €100,000 prize. That's split between the team members and their school. The three runners-up receive €25,000. Teachers are also in with a chance to be recognised as the Educator of the Year. That's an award there of €10,000. The teachers who are listening, how do they get involved and, you know, be lucky enough to be crowned the Educator of the Year?
Well, the Educator of the Year was to give some recognition to teachers. Now, we've made it very, you know, light touch for teachers. We know they're very busy. So there's not a lot of work if a teacher wants to get involved. You know, they just have to let the kids know and, you know, and then kind of give them a bit of supervision. But basically, as a kind of a payback, we said the kids can nominate their teachers, and they have to, you know, write an essay why their teacher deserves to be Educator of the Year. And last year, actually, we had a school based in a refugee camp in Jordan, in the Middle East, and they nominated their teacher, and she went on to win. And that has been really life-changing for her. She was zoomed in to a big UN conference on education in New York at the UN building there. And, you know, so there's been a lot of amazing life-changing stories out of this Earth Prize. And, we want to get more Irish schools and students involved, basically.
Yeah, 516 schools across 114 countries last year and territories, it has to be said. The winning team in Vietnam, they came up with a fully biodegradable sanitary pad. It was made out of dragon fruit peels. They named it the Adzorbi pad, and it should degrade in only 6 to 8 months. Then, opposed to the widely used plastic ones we see in our supermarkets, pharmacies, etc., every single day, which take up to 800 years to decompose, and obviously clogging landfills. Now, students in Ireland, they have until the 30th of November to sign up. They can do so on theearthprize.org. TheEarthPrize. And you'll find out much more information and reading about the structure of the competition, etc. Thank you very much for joining me. Of course, Kildare native, founder of the Earth Foundation, that non-profit organisation based in Geneva. Peter McGarry, take care.
The ISPCC has launched a new anti-bullying programme called SHIELD to mark Anti-Bullying Week, which runs from the 14th of November, so yesterday, to the 18th of November. The programme aims to support schools, clubs and other organisations engaging with children in their efforts to proactively manage bullying and protect children from bullying through prevention and intervention strategies. And Victoria Howson is the anti-bullying coordinator with the ISPCC. Good morning to you, Victoria.
Good morning, Owen. Hi.
Tell us a little bit more about this new initiative then, SHIELD. What's this about?
So our SHIELD programme was originally launched in 2012, but since then there has been, you know, the face of bullying has changed. Now we have cyberbullying, online safety is a key concern for a lot of organisations and parents and caregivers alike. So we wanted to basically relaunch our SHIELD anti-bullying programme and reimagine it in a new evidence-informed way that would be accessible to educators and organisations like clubs, creches, residential settings, etc. across the country, with the aim to help support the adults in the children and young people's lives in how to help prevent and intervene when bullying occurs. So that's, I suppose, the kind of key component of it and the key ethos behind it. But namely, it is just of what can we do as adults and children, young people's lives to help prevent bullying.
Research tells us, Victoria, that over one third of children in Ireland have been bullied. How does that impact them in their day-to-day lives?
That is a true statistic, and we at ISPCC in our Child and Listening Service often have around 23 contacts a week phoning in or chatting to us about incidents of bullying that has occurred for them. And it is something that has a detrimental effect in the present for a young person's mental health, emotional health and psychological well-being, but it has long-term effects, and that's one of the key reasons as well behind the programme that the work we want to do is to help with the long term, because we know that bullying has serious effect on a person's well-being as they grow up and can affect them into adulthood. I think we all know, you know, bullying is an umbrella term. We all know somebody who has either been bullied, we've had experiences of bullying ourselves, and we can instantly, that word, I think, it has a lot of emotional impact for us because we all know how damaging it can be and how horrible it can feel.
Children as well reach out to your child line, 24-hour support, and those that you engage with through the supports have shared their experiences of bullying. Words such as being alienated, intimidated, belittled, isolated, physically harmed, targeted for being different, all words that we would associate with bullying. And as you referenced from the outset, it has changed, and that the dynamic of bullying has changed since maybe, you know, people who are listening back in the 90s or the 80s that experienced bullying, because we now have online and social media, and it's so easy to be targeted nowadays if you're a child.
It is, and I think one of the key differences is what I've heard, especially as well from working with parents and caregivers and teachers with bullying, is that, you know, compared to, you know, even say 10, 15 years ago, when you were being bullied in school or even, you know, friends outside, there was a pause, or there was sometimes a stop, because, you know, you could go home and, or you had somewhere to kind of go and you know, get a little bit of relief from it. But nowadays, with an introduction of online bullying and cyberbullying, there isn't a relief from it. There isn't a break. Like, we're seeing that, you know, children who are being bullied, it can be a 24-hour ordeal now. Where you're being bullied in school, there could be unwanted taunts or unwanted nicknames, etc., that are being thrown around in the school, on the playground, and then that follows you onto your social media as well, onto your social media platform, whether it's your Facebook, your Instagram, your Snapchat, etc., and there isn't a lot of escape from young people from that. So I think that's one of the key changes that has happened over the last few years, that is really detrimental for young people.
A key component of this SHIELD programme is the SHIELD self-evaluation tool. Tell us a little bit more about that, Victoria.
Yeah, so I suppose with our self-evaluation tool, what this looks at, it's distilled to the latest research all into 10 SHIELD statements. So they're evidence-based statements, and they're a way for either schools or creches or clubs to reflect on what they're already doing in their anti-bullying policy or what they're doing in their organisation. And it just helps them to kind of guide them to see what their strengths and what some of their weaknesses are, what more could they be doing. And then, of course, focusing on the positives, what have they already doing. So it's a really great evaluation for them to see what is needed and assessing the development of their approach to bullying. So they go through the evaluation tool, which there is a link on our website, and you can also contact myself for more information. It's completely free, and if you complete that evaluation, you are then a SHIELD organisation with the ISPCC, and that then gives you extra support and help for your organisation, such as talks, webinars. We also worked in collaboration with DCU Anti-Bullying Centre and Webwise in developing this tool, so we also have access to their supports as well for organisations.
So really you're targeting organisations and clubs, groups, schools who are dealing with children who want to combat bullying or maybe highlight it, because sometimes you may have a coach or a teacher who knows that bullying is going on but is not really too sure how to address it. So this tool will kind of help with that, will it?
Exactly. You know, I mean, the National Centre for Educational Statistics in 2019 showed that one in every five children are report being bullied. But that is only the ones who report being bullied. A lot of the times when we're talking about bullying, there are a lot of children and young people who see bullying happening, or, you know, it is happening to them, and they actually just really feel it's so difficult to come forward. So that combined with the fact that there is so much knowledge out there and there is so much misinformation as well, people who want to support young people and children with bullying and help to prevent it and intervene when it happens, it's a lot for them. So what we're looking to do is kind of collate all that research and all the work that's out there and make sure that we have it presented in an accessible way for people, you know, teachers, coaches, etc., to help support them in, well, this is what is evidence-based. This is what you can do to help that young person who's either being bullied or and has come forward or is being bullied and feels that they can't come forward. With a lot more support available, etc.
All right, great stuff. Just before you go, you might remind us of how people can get information, what the best website is, and phone numbers, and even the child line number if you have that handy.
Yeah, so my own name is Victoria House, and you can contact me at the shield at ispcc.ie email address. And that's just any queries at all about bullying or shield in general. I'm happy to take those questions. We also have our website, ispcc.ie, and on that we have a list of services, including our shield anti-bullying program. And then, of course, for any children, young people listening to this, and maybe want to chat about bullying or just in general have a chat as well, we have trained volunteers 24 hours a day on our number at 1800 66 66 66.
All right, great stuff. I think it's a great initiative, and fair play to all involved there at the ISPCC. Victoria Housen is the anti-bullying coordinator with the ISPCC. More information on the website ispcc.ie. Victoria, thanks for taking the time out to talk to us on the show this morning. We just got a message in from a listener as well, wondering if there's any update on the traffic situation on the M50 because they're heading towards the airport. Well, for some, isn't it? Although I can't say much. I'm only back from a few days off. But the traffic is moving well on the M50 northbound and southbound. There was a couple of incidents there earlier this morning, but they have both been cleared. And just to let you know that whether you're travelling towards the M50 on the N4 or the N7, both of those are moving well as well. So all is good around the county in terms of the traffic. And if you do notice anything out and about on the roads that is worth mentioning in your local area, text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97. You can email studio@kfmradio.com or you can call us on 045 898 999. But just make sure that you do it when it's safe to do so and you're not driving.